Okay, well, welcome, dear listeners, to another edition of the Jacobs Podcast. Today we are talking about role models, and I'm joined again by two regular guests, Jordan Shopov in Melbourne. Jordan, welcome back.
Thanks, Sean. It's great to be here with two of my role models.
Oh, very charming, straight off the bat. Again, I think we can end the episode there and then just call it a micro podcast and finish up.
Nothing further from you, Jordan.
That's right. And, of course, from New York, who's made the time, Will Witheridge, welcome back.
Great to be with you both. Next role models as well.
Definitely. Well, the feeling's mutual, guys. So thanks so much for coming on again today. And I do note that our last episode that we all did together was really well received, and we're getting some great feedback on housing. So I think, you know, Jordan, your insights there have been pretty impressive, and a lot of people have benefited from the discussion. And I think I had a lot of good feedback on that one in particular. So thanks very much, gents. That was a great one.
Pleasure. I hope we didn't scare too many people.
No, I think actually a lot of people appreciated the, you know, difference between price and value, and you know, the difference, or the, I guess, the regulatory regime and the difficulties around that, and then just the progress around mortgage lending practices and how much that world had evolved. So I think it's just really insightful, all-encompassing discussion. But I think in that episode we did, you mentioned Jordan Warren Buffett, and I know without fail he's going to be a good role model of yours. And Will, I know there's a lot of famous economists who I presume that you very much look up to in certain aspects and ways, but role models, I think, is just a great topic to look at, because out of it flows these ideas of, you know, leadership, aspiration, goals, applying, I guess, characteristics to one's own circumstances, confronting failure, all these sorts of things, I think, and meeting setback and achievement all come out of role models. And what I wanted to do is just kick off and just get straight into it. I might just throw to Will. I just want to ask straight off the bat, who are your role models and why?
Thanks, Sean. So I think that my role models are economists who apply their skills and expertise to thinking about public policy issues and questions. So these are generally economists with an academic background that then take that to problems that can have a big impact. So an example might be someone like Bruce Chapman, who's a professor of economics at ANU. And in the 1980s, he, working as an advisor to the Minister for Education in Australia, devised the HELP, or HEX, higher education funding system, which has enabled, you know, tens of thousands of Australians to go to university. And, been a fantastic public policy innovation in Australia.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that's that, you know, I know Andrew Lee, who's a federal MP, I think he's the shadow assistant treasurer or whatever position he is in now, who's been an academic himself. He always looks up to Bruce Chapman. And I mean, again, it's a really good idea in the sense that, yeah, like the HECS system, you do pay it back once you reach a certain income. And like you said, it enables you to get into or be able to access study or funds to study. But in a way that I think that evokes a bit of envy from other parts of the world, whereas it's something that seemed like a pretty straightforward, I sense, policy idea when Chapman proposed it.
Well, yes, it's opened up higher education to thousands of Australians and made it, you know, sustainable and affordable by the Australian government. So, but it was an innovation at the time in introducing this this model for funding higher education in Australia, and has now been adopted in other countries around the world. So that's a real policy innovation, which came from an Australian economist. Another role model of mine might be someone like Martin Parkinson, the Secretary of the Department of Prime Minister and Cabinet, former Treasury Secretary in Australia, who's got a background in academia, a long time career in the Treasury Department, and as well as working at the IMF on international economic policy issues, representing Australia. So that's another sort of role model of mine. And then I guess another another characteristic of just economists who engage in the public debate around policy issues. So these might be someone like Tyler Cowen, who's one of the most influential economics bloggers, who runs the Marginal Revolution blog and hosts a podcast called Conversations with Tyler, where he interviews a range of people, not just economists. And, you know, another role model of mine in this mold is Catherine Mann, who was the former chief economist of the OECD, who I worked for when I was there at the OECD. And, you know, it's just a fantastic economist who contributes to the public debate around economic policy.
And it seems there's a theme there, Will, of just, like you say, I guess not being completely isolated in academia or being someone who's working in the profession, but being able to provide public commentary. But like you said at the very start, that I think is something that's pretty admirable, and that's contributing to public policy. And I guess it's not letting knowledge, a sense, go to waste, but trying to put that to good use and not it sort of serving itself in terms of driving, I don't know, an isolated kind of just academically focused work, pardon me. But yeah, again, it's just contributing to public policy discussion and ideas that might help and further things.
Yeah, I think people that I admire do have that academic rigor and, you know, that deep understanding of economic research, but then try to apply that and have an impact, even if it's sort of indirectly with how their work informs public policy and can be taken up by others, or then working directly on economic policy issues themselves.
Will, can I ask, are there any role models you have, because the ones you mentioned are all people you might have even had contact with personally, are there any role models you have from, like, the eminent dead, so to speak, any historical figures that you admire?
Well, I mean, there are the great economists like Adam Smith and Keynes, who, you know, wrote on a whole range of economic issues and were really sort of influential thinkers in economics. Another might be someone like Ken Arrow, who was a very influential American economist in the 20th century and just worked on a whole range of issues, not just in economics, more broadly. So yeah, I think those are some outstanding people from the past who've really informed the economics as it is at the moment, and will continue to inform economic policy.
Ken Arrow, he was one of the, I think he was the youngest Nobel laureate in economics. Is that true? Do you know what he actually won it for?
He won it for his work on perfect competition and having the impact of competitive markets and how that leads to what are known as Pareto efficient outcomes. So these are outcomes in which you can't make anyone better off in economy without making someone else worse off. This is an economic notion of Pareto efficiency, and Ken Arrow proved that competitive equilibria in making a whole lot of assumptions were Pareto efficient, and that's a very significant result in economics, which was established in the mid 20th century.
Jordan, turning to you now, living or dead, who are some of your role models? I mentioned one of them already, but enlighten us on a few more.
Yeah, you did get one of them, which was Warren Buffett, the chairman and CEO of Berkshire Hathaway. But I do have some overlap with Will, actually. The couple of the eminent dead that I admire, one is Adam Smith, and another one is Friedrich Hayek, who was similar to Ken Arrow. He was a Nobel laureate in economics. And he was seen as Keynes's great rival in the 20th century, the intellectual rivals. If you studied economics, you might have come across a famous rap video, which was produced by Russ Roberts, the host of Econ Talk, and that rap video is based around the intellectual battle between Keynes and Hayek. So if you want to nerd out for a bit, I suggest you go and look that video up. It's an absolute classic. Then some of my other role models are more modern day financial professionals. So there's Charlie Munger, who's Warren Buffett's partner, the vice chairman of Berkshire Hathaway. And then another one is Peter Thiel, the venture capitalist, who was the co-founder of PayPal and also the first outside investor in Facebook. And he's also invested in companies like Airbnb and Palantir and SpaceX. So he's rather controversial at the moment because he was a key supporter of Donald Trump. But I admire him more for his investment prowess and some of his more economic contributions. Then there's also a couple more. Jim Grant, who's the author of Grant's Interest Rate Observer, a financial journal publication, and also an author, a financial author, a historian. And then there's Howard Marks of Oak Tree Capital. And lastly, Nassim Taleb, who's an author as well.
So, Jordan, what do you think ties together or are sort of common characteristics that this broad range of your role models possess?
Yeah, because they're good question. Because they are. I was thinking about this before we started. Because there's some diverse characters in there, and they're not all from one specific profession. And yeah, there's a few of the eminent dead there as well. I think one thing that stands out to me is that they're all probably contrarian, independent thinkers in their own field, in their own time. They were all seen as controversial and often heretical. So they thought for themselves, they broke new ground, and they really pioneered the field in whatever it was, whether it was in investing, like Peter Thiel in venture capital, or Howard Marks in distressed investing, or Adam Smith's ideas, the Scottish philosopher, you know, around natural liberty and the wealth of nations. And I think the other key element is that they're all I would say more philosophers. They have a very generalist knowledge set, which is something that I truly have come to value. I think the tendency today is more towards specialization. And I think all of my role models have really embraced the idea that you need a generalist understanding and really tap into these sort of first principles to make sense of the world.
I noticed Jack Bogle didn't make your list, Jordan.
Yeah, that's a good point, Sean. Probably a bit of an oversight there. Jack Bogle he should be everyone's
hero. He meets those characteristics, I think, in a really good way, contrarian thinker. I think, so just, can you just quickly explain just very briefly what his big contribution was that I think grew out of an honours paper that he did that it ended up being likened to the invention of the wheel.
Yeah, I think it was his PhD thesis or his master's thesis at Yale. It was around returns for individual investors, and he essentially argued, or he hypothesized that an investor could do as well or if not better than most active mutual funds by investing in a basket of stocks that was equally weighted based on their size or their market capitalization. And that theory eventually turned into the first index fund and the founding of the Vanguard Group. And that Vanguard now today manages something like $6 trillion in assets under management. And, you know, most people would be aware of index funds, but he was essentially the pioneer.
Okay. Interesting, Jordan. Another one to add to your list. What about you, Sean? You want to share with us some of your role models?
Yeah, for sure. Look, I think one of the things that, you know, as well as contributions and people who have done, you know, a lot to advance public life or, I guess their specific professional area and then contributed to public discussion and debate and, you know, been disruptive thinkers, role models always for me, I guess, are inspirational figures, as I'm sure they are for you guys and probably a lot of other listeners as well. They sort of inspire a sense of, I guess, what's possible. And I think they can be, especially for young people or when you're coming through an informative time in your life, they can act as a blueprint on, you know, how to get to where you want to go or what it takes to actually get to somewhere and looking down the road. And, two that I always stick out for me are Condi Rice as the former US Secretary of State and National Security Advisor. And then Colin Powell as well, who she took over from in the Bush administration when he was Secretary of State, and who was Chairman of the Joint Chiefs and also National Security Advisor. So a very sort of two very well accomplished people that were, and the reason I selected those is because I remember studying international relations and current or political science at school, and just an informative time of my sort of life and coming out of high school or in high school in the early 2000s, they were figures that were really in vogue at the time in world and global affairs. And so you sort of look at people like that on your screens and on television, and you see that they're in these huge positions of responsibility, and you think, okay, wow. And I think everyone sees in role models a bit of themselves to a degree, and that's where I think they show you what's possible. And so, you know, I made the distinction that I remember about, and this is something that I sort of teased out over time, but having sort of near and far role models. So you can have those people who are just, I guess, world beaters in international affairs, but a lot of their success is so far down the road from where you are, you know, as an undergrad or a high school student, that I think you also need, I guess, near role models as well as far role models. So the people, there's a lot of people that I looked up to were, you know, remember looking at people who got into the most competitive graduate programs who were doing well in terms of community, social, private sector, or, you know, even military and working in the public sector as well. You know, the students who got in the most competitive graduate programs who are doing good work in all these different sectors, read their bios and sort of worked backwards from there, that although they were a few years ahead of me in their career, that these were really people whose characteristics that I had to adopt. And I always just remember the one key theme of any role model, near or far, is that none of them ever wasted their time. And so that's really what inspired, I guess, a big turnaround for me in terms of, you know, like not wasting one's time and actually, you know, bunkering down and getting on with it, because, you know, you've got to put in so much work early on that will give you an advantage down the track, which is exactly what, you know, my role models were doing, which I'm sure a lot of yours were too. And I think as well that something, another interesting thing other than near and far role models, is this idea of, and you guys have just both alluded to it, that, you know, another one of mine is an American economist, Thomas Sowell, who's a prolific author, and I really enjoy the way that he's able to distill really complex issues into very simple and easy prose that's very understandable for someone who's not, I guess, an academic or someone who's very entirely well-read, I guess. But one of the things he always talks about is, you know, I guess, intellectuals and intellectual overreach. So you can be really good at one thing or very specialised, as you said before, Jordan, where a lot of the emphasis is on. But then when it comes to other areas, it just becomes like, so you mentioned, for example, Peter Thiel, who's a big supporter of Donald Trump, whereas I think a lot of people are able to sort of make the distinction about looking at Thiel's characteristics that have made him successful as a savvy investor and a thinker and a businessman, but tease that out from the political and some of, I guess, his other beliefs as well. And I think it's a really good lead into this idea of composite role models that that I think that if I might just get Will to actually explain that. But Jordan, did you want to jump in just quickly there?
Oh, yeah. I wanted to add something. I like that idea you said of near and far, because I think most people, when they think of role models, think of the further one, you know, people from history or famous people. But I think the idea of a near role model is a really good one to think about, especially because those types of role models are sometimes the ones you don't actually realize or you don't expect. And I think, for instance, the people you make friends with. So I might have said at the start that you two, you know, a couple of role models, but, you know, that was a bit tongue-in-cheek, but also true. Mm-hmm. Like, I think you gravitate towards people who you respect and admire the way they go about things. And I think the saying, you know, be careful who you make friends with because you become what they are. I think being conscious of those types of near role models in your life is really important.
And I think as well, like, it's just, like it is really, I think, a surefire way to set yourself up for, I guess, being miserable if you try overshoot very early on and you think, oh, I'm just going to become this overnight, or you look at your role model and go, oh, cool, why aren't I there yet? Or, you know, even a short space of time. And it's like, that's why you need those sort of short run and the people around you, which is, I guess, like you guys as well, for myself, just to chime in and supplement you there. But
yeah. This is turning into a bit of a love fest. Maybe we should
move on. Yeah. Well, let's break it apart right now. But maybe it's a good idea to just talk about composite role models, because we've sort of been talking about, I don't think you're ever going to get a role model who's the complete person. You've got to tease out certain characteristics. So maybe just explain that. I think it's a really good concept for listeners.
Yeah, the way I sort of thought about this is that there can be a lot of gains from having role models or a role model. And this, a lot of this comes around emulation. So you're, doing similar things to them, or taking on particular behaviors or traits which you admire and want to emulate too, in trying to, achieve, or follow their success. But then I think there comes a point where you sort of want to break beyond just emulation, and this is kind of like if you're innovating as a business, you want to be doing something new and different. And a lot of this can come by combining different aspects and behaviors. So this is, I think, why it's really valuable to have composite role models that you're combining different strengths and habits or sort of attitudes that that people might have in the way they are. So this is kind of links to what you were saying. It's it's important to remember that no one's perfect, and there might be just certain things that you want to take and combine within yourself, because you're unique and you're trying to do something that's an expression of you. I wanted to follow up on the near and far, and I think this is really important and can kind of be a way to join the immediate and the long term role models that you might have. So you can think, someone who's the top of an organization or a Nobel Prize winner, it's impossible to jump from now as a young person just to there. And so you need these need to understand and have people that are more similar to your current situation. And I can remember a couple of people that I worked with in Canberra in the Australian government, a woman who was my immediate manager, a fantastic person to work for, and a woman who was in my same team at the time. And I learned a huge amount from both of them, just in the way they sort of carried themselves in the team and the way they worked. That was really impressive, and something that I wanted to to embody myself. So that's, I think, a bit around sort of composite role models.
Yeah, sure. And look, I think that's another really important point, is about I guess I mentioned before about not wasting their time, some of the key, but then one of the other things too is just adding value too. And that's one of the things that I noticed in the media people that I've worked for over the years in various teams and managers who've been very good at what they do, is that they're adding value to whatever it is. So you come to them with a problem that you can't work out. All right, well, like, this is how we solve it. And you break it down and get an outcome or a decision or resolution on it. And that's like one of the key characteristics that I've found in teams, like across all the sectors that I've worked in, is that, I guess, having a key characteristic is just being able to value add on something and not value subtract. And that's sort of an admirable trait or characteristics I've certainly tried to emulate and, provide direction, yes, but add value.
Yeah, and I think when you work for people or with people who are like that, it's they're fantastic to be around, and that can be an inspiration to try and emulate that and be like that yourself.
Absolutely. Yeah. And picking up on the composite thing, in my experience, what I've found is that some specific examples are, I've always admired, for example, the political perseverance of someone like John Howard, but then also the self-education elements of someone like Paul Keating, for example, whose politics, again, it's not the Teal and the Trump sort of thing. His politics I don't agree with a lot of them, but, you know, I really respect the guy for having left school at age 15, you know, not even completing school, but being responsible for some of the biggest economic reforms in Australian history. So that says a lot about that. That's really admirable there on self-education and self-learning. You know, there's others like Sam Harris, you know, who whose political views I think I stray from a lot, but I think just in terms of the logic and his thinking and the way he lays out arguments is a really, I guess, a really inspirational type technique or some of the characteristics that he has. There's a good writer as well that I enjoy, a guy like Patrick Leigh Fermor, who died a few years ago, but he was a World War II poet and great, great writer. But, you know, who's I could never write like him because it's just not my organic, authentic style, but I really appreciate, like, his written words and just his capacity for output. So, you know, those are some examples of live examples for me about composite role models, about teasing out different characteristics from people who are, I guess, are very vastly different to you, different sectors, different ages, different place, but just by way of being an individual, teasing out, like you said, all those characteristics and applying them to yourself as an individual, I think, is a good example, a live example of composites. Jordan, you know, we noted being part of a team and, you know, you're someone who's worked for yourself and consulting and setting up your own business. So I guess it's kind of difficult to be, you know, like tease out those same, other than just looking in the mirror and being admiring the other teammate looking back at you. But, you know, have you sort of felt the same sort of thing about people you've dealt with across different sectors or in any of your business practices that you've come across?
I think it kind of comes back to this idea of near and far type role models. I think the near one, like you said, cause working for myself, I don't really have much contact with people, not enough, as my wife would say. And I think a lot of it comes to that. So that element I get from the friendship side of things. I think that's I think that's an important way to get that type of that composite element. But I did like what both of you are saying about this idea of composite role models being not as in like something to imitate strictly, but it's kind of like a means of you finding your own your individual ambitions. So kind of like Sean used the example of writing. It's like in the end you could admire different authors, but you want to find your own inner voice. And it's the same with being an individual and like succeeding at your own calling in life, but taking different values and traits from people you admire. Really, I really like that.
Now, while I've got you too, Jordan, you mentioned to me, and this is something I didn't really, it wasn't a term that I knew too well, but the concept of the idea made a lot of sense to me, and that's inversion, or, you know, I guess anti-role models. Maybe just tease that out a bit, because it's a great concept, and I think, you know, while we're talking positively about a lot of admirable traits, there could be some less admirable ones. So maybe just jump into that. I think it's a good discussion there.
This is an idea I stole from Charlie Munger, one of my heroes, and he's got a famous saying: "All I want to know is where I'm going to die, so I never go there." And it's this. He's trying to hint at this idea of inverting the problem. Carl Jacobi, the mathematician, said, "Invert, always invert." And it's the hidden wisdom is that sometimes when you invert a problem, you see it in a new light. And it's actually easier to solve. So sometimes it's quite hard to find people you want to emulate and to, you know, like you were saying before, Will, like you can almost imitate too much and you lose your own individuality and you become too much of a clone. So sometimes it's easier to figure out what not to do and then just avoid that. So picking anti-models, in a sense, can be an easier endeavor for someone. I think especially at a younger age, I think you kind of, you know, when you're at school or you notice the people who are kind of like a bad, you know, a bad seed and or bad egg, and you don't want to hang around with them. I think that comes much more intuitively, and as you get older, you can find behaviors and traits among people that you don't want to replicate yourself, whether it's greed or envy or lying, those types of things. So I haven't got I was trying to think about a specific anti-model that I have personally, but I can't think of one. I have made the conscious note to try and find people like that. and I bought Hitler's biography, which caused a few, you know, eyebrow raises when I was buying it. But, you know, that's, you know, obviously that sends the wrong message, but I was looking for this anti-model element, trying to understand, you know, why people fail and why, what can send you on the wrong path as much as what can send you on the right path.
And I think it comes back to as well, like, exactly what you're saying about the people around you in social circles, I'm sure you can name a few people from school without, you know, being sued for defamation. But, it's those things are really important, I think, about, and it really always teases out making good choices early on because, over time, 10, 15 years, those, you know, choices exacerbate. And, you know, someone who makes a poor decision and is sort of slightly going off the rails when they're, say, in year 11 or 12, or who makes an exception or makes a poor decision, you can, unfortunately, a lot of the time, you know, almost most of the time guarantee that they're still going to be making poor choices if the, you know, in their mid-30s, and often those choices have much worse consequences. So one of the things I always say when I talk to young people about the book is, is Clayton Christensen's message about how can I be sure I'll stay out of prison? And, you know, the example he cites is not playing basketball on Sundays and how hard, because of his faith in that, how hard that decision was to make at the time and all the heat that he got for it. But the key lesson there isn't sort of, you know, faith or going to church. It's just about being vigilant about a decision and sticking with it because it'll sort of be your rudder over the long run.
Have either of you got a anti-model in your life?
Yeah, for me, I think, you know, we talked about working with good colleagues and good managers. I'm sure each of us can also think about, poor managers or teammates who we were worked with at certain points. And, you know, those can be anti-role models. When you're when you have a bad manager, you can still take a lot away from that in learning how not to be and making sure that when if you become a manager, you don't do those certain things. You adopt different behaviors. And so I think that's, you know, an example of anti-role models and things that, you know, you can note those down when you're in a difficult situation and avoid doing those things in the future. An interesting one, and I guess we haven't touched too much on role models and how they evolve over time. And I think this is something which also happens is that, you know, your role models change. And, one from when I was young was Lance Armstrong. He was, he was a hero of mine and a role model for the, overcoming adversity, working and training so hard and, you know, reaching the peak of his sport. And then, once he was revealed and confessed to being a drug cheat, has evolved to an anti-role model for me and someone who, kind of like what you were saying, Sean, about, who made, big mistakes and, really sort of compromised their values over time and, is now a disgrace of the sport. So I think that's an example for me of
Yeah, and that's a good point because there's a few of those that always jump out to me, and similar to Lance Armstrong, someone like General Petraeus, who's a guy's obviously extremely well accomplished as a military leader, as a even a historian, and also someone, who's applied his knowledge of history and, counterinsurgency to the practical world at, a very high stakes level in Iraq and leading the surge there. Who's someone who made really poor decisions, I guess, in his personal life. And, it's not like he went to prison or to jail or anything like that, but it just shows the sort of flaws of the individuals have, even though, you can be someone of huge accomplishment, but again, that comes back to those, you're still a prisoner of lousy decisions, regardless of the heights that you reach and the professional accomplishments that you have. And, Tiger Woods is another great example, a world-beating, golfer, but again, who has some, you know, made some pretty interesting decisions in his private life. Another one, you know, Michael Phelps, I think, is, you know, one of the most successful Olympic athlete in history. But, you know, who showed, I think, poor judgment by smoking marijuana and a couple of other indiscretions that he's had. So again, I think the idea of composites is really is a really important one about, but then also the vigilance around making good decisions and being, you know, being vigilant about decisions over time and just how important it is.
I think that's also just a couple of examples you used there, Sean. I think it made me think about how sometimes as a society we can put people up to become role models, which we might, you know, might be better off if we didn't. So I think there's a tendency to hold sports stars up as role models, and we can kind of overdo it in a sense. And, you know, a lot of the time these sports stars are young people who are still, you know, kids and figuring things out. So, yeah, it's a good lesson of, like, how to pick role models and also not to go too far. Like you said, you're looking for composites, you're looking for certain traits within people. But, yeah, there's an interesting social element as well about how society picks role models as a culture.
Yes. Yep, absolutely. And actually, there's a good sort of tie into what I just wanted to prompt next, and that's to, you know, in this theme, as you mentioned, about overextending. And, you know, I think there's been a big emphasis on, and I do write about this in my book, is about, you know, if you install someone of certain cultural or racial characteristics to a certain profession or into a certain area, that will immediately achieve results about lifting people, you know, building socioeconomic success. And one of the big things around this is when it comes to black leadership in the United States and the huge emphasis that there has been placed on getting more black Americans into politics and seeing, I guess, political power as a way of enhancing socioeconomic success. And I guess one of the things I talk about as well is Chris Rock and, you know, how he talks about, and we've talked about this too, about seeing, I guess, someone that looks like you in a certain profession and how inspiring that can be. And that's something that he, you know, is a quote that I cite that I think is really important. But again, not overextending it to the point of thinking that, okay, well, look, we'll flood all of these positions with people who look like, you know, other minorities that, and therefore expecting, you know, a decent result when I think the reverse has been true. So I just want to sort of gather your thoughts there because I think it does tie into, you know, one of the, actually a great example, there's a Wall Street Journal writer, a guy called Jason Riley, has talked a lot about this in the past few years, and Walter Williams and even Thomas Sowell as well, about, you know, going down the political route has never really been a good way to actually achieve success in the United States, at least success in terms of educational attainment, you know, jobs and correcting unemployment, right, you know, decent incomes, all these sorts of economic characteristics aren't really enhanced by going down the route of, I guess, politically installing people, enhancing political power. But I just wanted to get your thoughts there, guys. Maybe it's about that thing about overextending or looking in the wrong places for role models. But perhaps actually even a better question to bounce off you is this idea of, you know, do you have a choice as a role model? I think it was Charles Barkley or someone saying, you know, years ago that he didn't want to be one. And the big debate at the time was you have no choice. Just by simply by being you know, notable in public arena, you've got no choice. But what are your thoughts there? Maybe Will, do you want to jump in?
Yeah, I remember Chris Judd, the AFL player, saying similar things about how he didn't consider himself a role model, and he was, you know, kind of making similar points to what Jordan was saying about, you know, he's a footballer, but, you know, Your role model should be more people like your, you know, your parents and members of your family. Yep. And so I think, it seems inevitable in society sort of putting this on prominent figures and public figures that they role models and are looked up to. So, yeah, I'm not sure if there's there's too much around this. It seems like it's a natural thing which happens to celebrities. And on your point about minority leaders, or just having, you know, having role models and people who are, you know, in some ways like you, I think that it's important, and this symbolism matters in having, you know, for example, female leaders for women to aspire to be like, and similarly sort of racial minorities. But of course, it's you know, it's about them being in these positions on their merits, and that's, it's because they deserve to be there, and that's what you should aspire to as well, and that so that's, I guess, what I'd sort of say briefly on that. And you know, it's important not to equate being in those positions with outcomes. It can happen, of course, but there's a bit of a mix around that. So that's some of my thoughts on those.
Yeah, and that's much more articulate in the way that I put it. I think it's, you know, the symbolism matters, yes, and it shouldn't subtract from the individual elements that individuals have to bring to whatever enterprise that they're endeavouring in. Jordan, any thoughts from you?
Yeah, I like the example you gave of Charles Barkley. I hadn't heard that one, but I think it's interesting to think about this idea of whether you can sort of abdicate your role as a role model. I think that's a bit bizarre, because in a way most people would love to be a role model, because they, you know, in that position of influence, it means they have an opportunity to ensure that their ideas and values, continue after they're gone. So, that, I think people should be embracing that privileged position, and sports stars or celebrities who, by choice or not, end up in a position of, as a role model position, need to sort of take that responsibility. You know, it goes with the position. You can't abdicate it. So, yeah, I think it's a very interesting idea to think of that privilege you have in society.
And I guess what ties into this too, and I just highlighted a passage that, and it might seem a bit bizarre to sort of bring it up, but I think when people, you know, you might have, I guess, some people who are very, for example, Trump in the United States, in the history of Queensland, there's a standout figure, a guy called Joe Bjelke-Petersen, who was the premier, the longest serving, political leader, I think, that we've ever had in Australia. But he's someone who, you know, people look back and they think, gosh, you know, how could someone like that be running a state and do it for so long and be so successful? Because he's got, I guess, a lot of fans, but at the same time, a lot of people, a lot of visceral dislike, especially of his legacy and how he ran the state at the time. But I recently read a short biography on him by an Aussie journalist called Hugh Lund that was, I think, written back in the 70s. But I found an interesting passage in there where it was a really good explanation, I think, of his success. And I'll just quote here that this is Joe. He's also been a winner in a state where people often feel they are losing out, not well-educated in the full sense, pardon me. He runs a state where people leave school earlier than anywhere else in Australia and where fewer places are available at university. But I think that's that passage, though, about where people often feel they're losing out. And when they see those sorts of characteristics in someone who looks like they're actually winning or prospering or doing well, that can be incredibly persuasive and attractive as well. And I think that's probably something that I haven't read Mein Kampf, Jordan, but I'd love to hear your insights on it. But from my understanding of that, what Germany was like in the 30s, it was that sort of sense of people looking for someone who's going to pull the place out of the doldrums, and then seeing someone who's talking powerfully, who can exploit, I guess, a lot of sentiment and build on that, and then build that admiration, and, you know, someone who, you know, is decisive and starts building a groundswell. But I think that can be, whilst probably not role models specifically, it does sort of say a lot about leadership as well. But then in that same sense, admiring some characteristics of people who might seem a bit bizarre for one set of people, actually make sense to another set of people.
I think one thing, I haven't read Mein Kampf, so I have to take that one on notice, but the the example you use, I think, is interesting in the sense of, you know, the way groups can coalesce around a leader, and that's the ultimate power of a role model. They have a following. They can almost create like cults because of their notoriety and the strength of their character. So I think the lesson there is, though, that, you know, these people lead by example. They don't dictate. I mean, Hitler obviously is a different one. He became a dictator, but, you know, he had to bring people along with him first. So, you know, putting Germany to one side, I think that leading by example is what these role models, near and far, are able to do. It's the quality of their actions, the quality of their character, which bring people along.
That's right. And what they say too as well, I mean, I think that's why when you look to, I guess, representatives of community groups or certain sections of the community, it's why, you know, where leadership's also emphasised, I guess, when you look for them to say the right things, and why it's just that premium is so important on, those characteristics, but also verbally what they say as well as their actions. I might just finish off because I think we're doing pretty well for time, but I just wanted to ask you guys, sort of coming towards the end, if you're conscious about being a role model yourself. I know certainly in my instance that I sort of like to sometimes think that I might be a bit of a role model for myself 10 years ago, or, you know, be someone looking to myself now and trying to think of, you know, being a role model to myself 15 years ago. Will, I'll start with you. Are you conscious about that?
I think I have become conscious of it, and I guess it's maybe it's in things like in, you know, a leadership role in a sports team or in a club or at work. You know, if there starts to be sort of more junior people, then I think you start to realize that how you carry yourself and act matters, and that, you know, you're a role model in some sense in how you carry yourself. You know, it reflects on you and those around you. So I think I am or have become more conscious of that in the past few years. I would say on this that I think if, you know, being a model, I think it's kind of like being leader as well, in that it's I don't think it's a good idea to pursue being a role model or being a leader directly, in that it's more something that is the outcome, the result of something else. And this is, you know, you being being authentic and expressing yourself and, contributing to the world around you and the people around you. And that's what generates genuine followership and people being deserved role models for that. And it's more sort of, I guess, the outcome of you doing that. So that's, I guess, how I sort of think about how we should think about role models and being and leaders.
I like it. It's a really good point. You know, that point especially about not seeking it just for a position itself. And I think, you know, one thing that's always jumped out to me, you know, in probably in the major events sort of world and, you know, G20 and Com Games, where they had to manage a lot of people. So I've sort of, in the policy world, I haven't had the same level of leadership or managerial experience as working in an operational environment. But I think, you know, when you've been given a certain amount of responsibility and you're fully aware of the expectations that are on you, is being able to play that role. But I think as well, bringing, I guess, those organic characteristics that you talk about, Will, are really important too. That I think it's got to, the shoe's got to fit in terms of who you are as a person. Otherwise, it just is really inauthentic. And I think, again, this comes back to this idea of composite and teasing out what works for you and what doesn't. And that's going to get you to the same outcome as that you need to get to. But whereas, you know, leaders come in all shapes and sizes. So you don't have to emulate, you know, I guess, you know, someone who's a hard talking, like straight down the line person. if that's not you and that's not your style. And
yeah, absolutely. Again, I agree.
And whereas I think if I was to approach this discussion 10 years ago when I was a bit younger, I'd sort of get caught up too much in trying to be someone that you're not in a position of responsibility and thinking, well, because they're, you know, they're like this, then I've got to be exactly like that. It's not always the case. And I think if you can bring your organic characteristics, as you say, Will, the combination of your experiences and your attitudes, priorities and behaviours to a certain role, then that's much more important than just pure emulation or mimicking to a point that's not authentic and it won't help you at all.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, the you know, the results take care of itself. How you go about it, for sure.
And Jordan, are you conscious about being a role model yourself? What are your thoughts here?
I have never thought of myself that way. So that's it's an interesting idea to ponder though. But I agree with both of you that this is, you know, being a role model is not something you choose to be. You don't choose to be a leader. It's something that's bestowed upon you. You know, other people choose you to be. So it's very conscious. It's very important to be conscious of the way you conduct yourself and your behavior and the actions you take. And that's, you know, you lead by example, and that's how these types of things come about. But I was thinking about, you know, the opportunities where this is more likely to arise. And obviously the big one is as a parent, and, you know, three of us don't have any kids, but I think that's one thing I've, you know, you start to think about as you get older, that as a, the opportunity to become a role model, that's probably the biggest one you'll have later on in life. And I remember Buffett talking about this aspect of people's childhood, and he said that, you know, you can tell a lot about someone from who their role models and idols are at a young age. And of course, if they have, you know, their parents are the most important ones, and if they have high quality parents, they're going to do well in life. You can almost guarantee it. So
yeah, and I think that's an interesting one where, you know, as you said, I'm not a parent, but I'm sure you would be conscious of that as a parent, in, you know, how you act does impact on your children. And it's a very sort of, it's a primal, natural thing, and is a really good example of another type of role model that we haven't covered or mentioned yet.
Yeah, our parents would be very upset with us. None of us mentioned our parents.
True. That's actually a good point, because I remember even when I wrote the book, is just not being too, like, I didn't, and in that chapter on role models where I didn't talk about that too much, because it was just something that was such a given, where I didn't sort of have to acknowledge it. You immediately just go straight to thinking about, you know, your heroes, I guess, who are, you know, you've read about or you see online or you see on TV or whatever, and there's that sort of impulse to just look far. But yeah, I think, you know, certainly in my case, it's been something that's been really beneficial about, you know, adopting those characteristics and applying them to oneself, though, but not adopting them fully. And
well, like you said, Sean, it taps into this idea of near and far role models, and sometimes the near role models are, you know, they're subconsciously there, you don't even realize, like in your friends and your parents and your siblings. Yeah. So yeah, but yeah, you're right, they're probably the most important ones you have.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's something you I found I've appreciated much more recently, is the significant impact that your parents and your family have.
Yeah, that's right. And actually, there's a really good Mark Twain quote that, you know, it was something like between when he was, you know, 15 and early 20s, that, you know, in a couple of years he was surprised at how much smarter his father had become. And but definitely, Will, I think something that increases with age, your appreciation for these things and for family in general. And you know, I think as well, you know, too much is given, much is expected. That's a quote that, as you were just talking before, Jordan and Will, just earlier, that I think is just a really important point. But, you know, it's also what you give to yourself and the responsibility you place on yourself, whether you're a parent or, you know, in your interactions and how you conduct yourself, is just are those things as well that you have to be really mindful of or crystallise, I guess, the older you get. Conscious of time, gents, and I think we're going to wrap up there. And yeah, look, once again, I just want to say thanks for this episode, and you guys are, I guess, good examples of near role models. In the case of Will, probably a bit far, being in New York. So
geographically far.
Yeah, yeah. yeah, again, that was a great episode on housing that I think was really good, and I'm sure listeners will find this one a decent episode too, in terms of the terrain we've covered and some of the things that I think, you know, I'd really love to hear from listeners too about near and far role models. I think that'd be really important to get some feedback in that we can touch in on the next episode.
Absolutely, yeah.
Thanks, Sean. Yeah,
sure, excellent. All right, well, thanks very much, gents, and until next time.
Thank you.
Cheers.
And thank you, dear listeners, for tuning into that episode on role models with Jordan Shopov from WIG Capital and Will Witheridge, who is an economics student, PhD student at New York University in New York. We'd love to hear from you, genuinely so, about who your role models are and even who your anti-role models are. Please get in touch with us at seanjacobs.com.au. And remember to please rate the podcast. We're available on a lot of different platforms now, from Apple Podcasts through to Spotify. But we hope you enjoyed the discussion, and thanks very much for listening, and until next time.